Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
There has been a lot, and I mean a lot of Penn State news since Sunday night. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. The BWI mailbag comes out on Wednesdays, and it is chocked full, especially about wide receivers. And despite all that news, I still have my hair. I believe Nate Bauer still has his. And we're going to answer your questions on the BWI mailbag show coming up right now. Here we are again, Nate Bauer. It's the mailbag. It's the off season. It doesn't feel like the off season though, Nate. I have been strapped to my chair for 4 days. How are you doing?
It does feel like the off season. It feels like basketball season. But then there's also like this is. I was actually thinking about it as I was driving my children to daycare this morning. That you know, it's like the hot stove for baseball, right? Like
yeah.
This is it. These are all the transactions. And as a fan, I never understood why everybody cared about those things. But the longer that I'm in this business and the more that I realize, you know, the transfer portal and NIL represent free agency more or less. And the construction of your roster, fantasy football, like you put all those things culturally together and it makes sense, I think.
Yeah.
And I love, honestly, like if you compared right now to when I began my career covering Penn State football a long time ago at this point, like it's just so drastically different. We're not doing every day, like let's reassess every day what the position by position breakdown. Like there's actually stuff happening.
Yep.
There's news to be discussed and bantered about.
And that
about.
Assessment
and so
is dynamic.
That's what we're here for.
Right,
yeah,
that assessment is dynamic. Now, it's hilarious. You brought up, so growing up, here were the three jobs I wanted in sequential order. I'll start with four. Marine biologist when I was like four. Then
naturally.
I wanted to be a dentist. And then I wanted to be a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I realized that was never going to happen, I wanted to be a GM. So you are speaking my language of roster construction, understanding how these pieces fit together, talent, complementing talent, all that stuff. My only point is like we just some behind the curtain stuff. I'm off tomorrow. So we recorded four videos today. So it's the end of a long day. It's the mailbag show. So I'm doing the thing that I said I've been doing. I'm going to do for a while. And as I'm actually going to have a nightcap during the show. So I'm answering your questions and having a little bit of rum.
Oh,
yeah.
Spicy. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. All right.
I actually brought the bottle. Shout out to Big Spring Spirits in Bellefonte. Big Spring Spirits. One of my favorite places to buy any sort of spirit. And definitely should be a sponsor of the show because they sponsor the after show party. So why not just be a part of the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in. I'm in. Let's do it. Let's make those connections.
So as we always do, here's the setup. If you want to get a question on the mailbag show, the two easiest ways to do that are to go through bluewhiteillustrated.com, sign up for $29.99 and get access to premium content. You're not just getting the mailbag. You're getting all the information to ask the next level sort of questions. And then you can be the shining star of the mailbag next to Nate, of course.
The things that we don't know the answers to.
Right. Which is always like the whatabouts and the next things. Or have a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's the next stream of questions that we're going to. So if you want to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your question, it's taken priority. We're getting to it. The first one off the bat today. And Nate, this one is especially for you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And this is actually really hilarious, and it's also really awesome. First off, 5-star review, you guys rock. Told Nate in person at the Michigan State football game to keep the basketball coverage coming, and he has delivered big time. Greg Peichel. Greg Pickle gave us a 5-star review. I had to text Greg Pickle and be like, hey, Greg, you didn't leave us a 5-star review to help us out, did you?
It was definitely him. It was definitely him because he did tell. Anyway.
That's like, excuse me, I would like a bank loan. I am Mr. Smith.
Yeah. Crentist the dentist. Anyway.
But of course, like if you're watching here tonight, as this airs live, we're not live right now, but airs live on YouTube at 7. Check out the basketball, the Hoop Show, which is at 4 p.m. Today. And as always, we'll make you aware when the next one comes out at some point. We forgot to schedule the next one today, Nate, though, so we'll have to get that on.
Thank you so much to Greg Pickle. I very much appreciate that.
And thank you to Greg Pickle, who does great work. Okay, let's get into the mailbag. Once again, BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, best place to get your questions. That's where we feature most of the people and the stars of the show today, which is always on the mailbag, is you. And you leave your question on the mailbag thread. We get to it, and we're going to start lots of questions about wide receiver because one of the breaking news items today, Penn State got an 11th-hour commitment from Malik McClain, the receiver from Florida State. So a lot of receiver talk early on, Nate. And Chess Westerson starts us off. I'd love to see a comparison between Devin Carter, bad, and Malik McClain, good. So he's already he's curating his content to start. He wants us, from what I understand this question to be, tell me how good Malik McClain is and how bad Devin Carter is.
Yeah, it has to be a win. Yeah, it has to be a win for Penn State, right? I'm gonna steal straight from my colleague Sean Fitz and just say that if you're looking for upsides of this. Yeah. From Penn State's perspective, it's that you have more time, right? You have more time to prepare, to develop Malik McClain, and you know, your optimism is built on the fact that he had a solid first season. I think had some injury issues this year, some things that kind of moved him to the back burner at Florida State. And so with a fresh start, Penn State on campus already, right?
Yeah.
Wednesday, January 18th. That's just a massive runway to enjoy before the start of the season.
Yeah. And I will always say he's a part of the Penn State strength and conditioning program for the winter that only does you good things.
Yep.
So let's take this and Fitz and I talked about this earlier today. Check out that video. But we'll get into a little bit more detail here. It's pretty clear, right? Devin Carter represents a veteran that will run routes and play now. And during his film room, which doesn't mean much anymore because he's going to West Virginia, the question really for him was, can he be the guy? Can he be the dominant force in a passing attack? Because he's got a lot of good traits. He's got a lot of, you know, vertical presence. Even if he's not the fastest guy in the world, he's 220-some pounds. And he catches the ball pretty well until he has concentration drops. Malik McClain is all of it. He is faster. He's bigger. He's not as bulky, you know, so he's 200 pounds, but he's got the frame of how big do you want him? That's kind of the way I look at him. He's more dynamic as a movement, as an athlete in movement. He can run routes better. I feel like he's got more snap in his transitions. So from an athletic standpoint, yes, Malik McClain plus the years is a big upside win for Penn State. But what are you trying to accomplish? Kind of like what we saw earlier with some of the other guys that they didn't get in the portal or that they shied away from, was you can fill a role in the offense. You can fill a position. And the whole point is to surround the new starter, presumably Drew Aller, with guys that can do a lot of different things. So with this particular group, I think that McClain fits in really well. And he is a vertical presence with size and speed, and he can make plays at every level of the football field. But he has some work to do on his route running and all of that stuff. So that's where I'd leave it there.
Good. Yeah, I do think your last point about veterans helping, like Penn State wasn't necessarily going into the transfer portal to replace or fix up sins in recruiting in the class of 2021, right? Like this is an immediate and present need for Penn State to have guy who can step in and be a featured receiver, right? I mean, yeah. It's just so
that's
much.
What Cephas this. Is. That's what Cephas is. And that's for why sure. this Malik McClain is really interesting. And that's why I compared him to Johnny Dixon, is because the talent level to be an NFL player is there. And I'm excited to see what he develops into, but he doesn't have 3 years. He has 2 years. And his skill level at his current position is similar to where Dixon was when he came to Penn State, except Dixon had that extra, right? And that's kind of where you are with McClain. He's got to develop a little faster because they do need him, but he doesn't have to be the guy because you got Cephas. So you get an upside play that can contribute, and then the dude who's going to be your lead dog and has been that, I think, in certain ways for a team previously.
Yeah. No, and I think between these two guys, Cephas and McClain, anything that helps put, and we talk about this all the time, but I just see it time and time and time again, of players need motivation. There needs to be someone close behind that can really force the existing players on the roster into being their best selves, whatever that's like. I just think that you see when there's no threat of losing a job to guys that care about it, guys that want that job, it can be a spark. It can be something that really aids, I think, in development. So we'll see.
I'm having a blank moment. Help me out here. The left tackle before Olufashanu. You can only remember so many names. And for a moment, Rashid I'm Walker. Forgetting. Rashid Walker had all the talent in the world, but there was nobody to push him. There was no threat behind him. And, you know, for guys that not everyone is intrinsically motivated at all times, that can internally turn it on. And I'm not saying that Rashid Walker didn't play hard, but there are detail things, and there's the next level of insanity that comes with being a great football player. Yep. And if you aren't being pushed to that level, that's kind of the conversation about the offensive line now. Fashanu has, in his own way, proven he is that guy, you know, that has gotten better and has pushed and pushed and pushed and become very good. But the right tackle position, the guard position, this is what I think what we're all excited about is, anytime I mention a starting five, somebody goes, well, what about this guy? Or what about that guy? And I go, exactly. Like, the best one's going to play, and they're not going to have as many weaknesses. At least that's how it should turn out. And with this group of receivers, I think you made the great point of this group does not necessarily – it's not about the young guys. It's about – so you don't have a redshirt freshman running a route wrong and the quarterback who's a sophomore throwing the football anyway, right? And making all of these compounding mistakes. You have more of an opportunity with veterans that they won't make as many mistakes and that you're avoiding some of those situations. But that leads us to the next question from Coast Fan, a regular on the board. He says, two much needed portal wide receivers now in the fold. Assuming Cephas comes through because he's not fully enrolled in that whole story. You can check out at a previous BWI Daily Editions. Roster management question here. Five receivers counting Christian Driver from the 2022 class with only one burning a red shirt. Seems like a log jam that requires some thinning out without naming names and getting unfair about that part. How many of that group will portal within the next year? This is kind of just an averages question, right? Like mathematically, a certain number are going to move on because that's been what happens. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily fair to start projecting like who that would be. These are stories to be written. There's things that occasionally players come in and you just know, right? It's very obvious, but I would argue pretty strongly more often than not, it's not obvious. Like these are things that, yes, there is a set of talent that coaches can see and can work with and can understand, but how you mold that and how you develop it, the rate of development, whether or not you plateau at a certain point, all of those things are somewhere between the day you arrive and the day you leave, whether that's as a graduate or as a transfer portal guy. It's just stuff that has to play itself out. And so is there a likelihood of a transfer at that position at some point? Yeah. I mean, Jaden Dotton is transferring, right? Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who went into the transfer portal, not the same class, but I just think that those things will filter themselves out as players recognize what their potential is, what their impact is in the program, and their opportunity to play, right? I mean, because mm-hmm. that's kind of what it comes down to is there a role, whether that's at wide receiver, or in Malik Mega's case, he hasn't fallen in as a receiver necessarily, but he has carved out a role for himself in special teams and has become an important piece of that. Where does that fit for everybody else? We'll see.
Yeah, and I think you bring up the point underneath it is, what's your fit in the offense compared to your peers too? So I think we've all pretty well pegged a guy like Caden Saunders as a slot receiver. And are there guys ahead of Caden Saunders that he's not going to be able to beat out over the next 2 years in order to see the field? On the flip side, somebody else, you know, again, not to name names, but like, where do guys fit in the room? Are you an X? Are you a Z? Slot, kick return, special teams? What is your, how do you fit into the picture? And to get some, just a finer point on it, that's going to be determining who has an eye on the portal. And without a receivers coach and kind of without seeing some of these guys in their development, like, I don't know where Tyler Johnson is in his development, because first off, very raw prospect. Secondly, I haven't seen him in a year. And we need to see more evidence about these guys to know like how the portal thing is going to go. But to answer the question, I think just from five and generally how it works, two would be the number I would say that might transfer, just because, you know, from based on the math and you only hit on a certain number of players. And even though you can get more receivers, you know, there's only three positions. And last thing, as I ramble on here, the next receivers coach, and if you can get guys that then leapfrog players, younger players playing ahead of veterans, that also has effect on it. LeFennec is back. LeFennec Fox. I hope I'm saying these names right. And these are probably like, we have a lot of smart people on the board, Nate. And some of these are like literary references that I'm not smart enough to know. So do you know this one?
I have no idea. I assume it's French. It sounds French, but
I would assume that's kind of what I thought. Okay. How many wide receiver transfers coming in before worrying about losing guys already on the roster with high ceilings that just haven't played yet? And with Stubbs exiting with a new wide receivers coach, are we going to see any wide receivers leaving after the spring? So kind of the same question, but in a microwave, not in long term. Right now, Jaden Dotton just went into the transfer portal, so there's one answer for you. But how much will the new receivers coach, do you think, potentially have an impact on that?
I think it could have some impact. I mean, if you don't like it, right? If you're not comfortable with the direction of your development based on, the receivers coach that's being brought in, and vice versa. Right? Yeah. I mean, if there's a receivers coach that's coming in that it feels the same toward you, then certainly those are things that you could see some entry into the portal in May, but I don't know. It feels very early to speculate or really know to that, because here's the reality is new receivers coach or not, there's already, you kind of know whether or not you fit at Penn State, whether that's ability wise, culture wise, what have you, and vice versa. Penn State can tell you fairly clearly whether or not you fit, whether or not you match the capability and the ability that you need to be able to play at this level. So, we'll see.
One quick story that is, I'll kind of leave out the names, but one thing I heard from a former player was that, I'm transferring because my coach didn't like me. And this was the previous receivers coach to Taylor Stubblefield. And just the idea that Taylor Stubblefield didn't like this player, then that player decided he was going to transfer. And like, whether that's true or a perception, like there are, like you said, clashing personalities, things just change. And that will, it's all still to be determined at this point. So that's kind of where it can, but I don't know that we know that yet.
And I think it's also important to note that it's not like James Franklin and Mike Yurcich don't have opinions on these things, right? That's why you have So, yeah, so on the granular level, I do think that that chemistry, cohesion, whatever you want to call it, the mixing of new coach and players that are already existing in the room, yeah, you have to find what that balance is. But also, Mike Yurcich is going to have an opinion. James Franklin's going to have an opinion. They're going to set a tone for what they want out of that room and, you know, make it known pretty clearly where these guys fit individually into that picture.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is BWI Mailbag Show. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. That is Nate Bauer. If you want to like the video, always appreciate here on YouTube the support there. Subscribe to Blue White Illustrated on YouTube. 5-star reviews. I'm going to say this again because I want to make sure that we're getting the point across to people listening on Apple Podcasts. We want you to be part of the show. And I know, like, here's the dirty secret. You guys make up a huge majority of the people that watch and listen to this show. And I want to hear from you. So leave a 5-star review with your question in the Apple Podcast review section, and we'll get it on the next mailbag show. But you can leave that anytime. You don't have to leave it right now. You can leave it on any podcast. When we see it, we'll get it on the show for next week so we can start building these up and you can get your questions on the show. I think this is the last question on receivers. How crazy is the Penn State loses their wide receivers coach, picks up 2 receivers in the portal? How much do you think the portal pickups will help next year? This gets into kind of the specifics of it that I'm excited about because now we know. And right. We talked about the veteran part of it, but it also gives Penn State, I think, a more clearly defined depth chart, knowing the skills of the players that we have in the mix. The question I have, Nate, and not having a receivers coach, not really knowing any, we know Penn State does not guarantee things to players. Malik McClain still chooses to go to Penn State. So yeah. I guess, like, I don't know if I want to ask you what the sales pitch is, but like, yeah. How would you make that leap of faith given that you were leaving a situation where you weren't seeing the field as much as you thought you maybe should have?
I think the one, I don't know how applicable this is or not, but the one thing that has been, I think, kind of demonstrated to me more than a few times is that there's a little bit of an expectation, I think, at this point in the recruiting process that your position coach will not be with you for the duration of your career. Like, I genuinely think that that recruits and their families feel that way. You're not committing to that coach. In a lot of ways, you're not committing to that. I mean, you are committing to the head coach, but you also, you never know with that as well. Certainly, yeah. Penn State is trying to frame itself as a place of stability in James Franklin's situation. Like, that's for an entirely different conversation. But the point is, you're okay, I guess, is the point, right? You're like, regardless of who your position coach is specifically, if you see a role for yourself in the offense, the defense, special teams, what have you, it's not really necessarily just the position coach's decision as to what your opportunity is, right? Yeah. It is under the purview of the offensive coordinator, the head coach, you know, those higher ups in the ladder.
We're talking about receivers, but on offense, the running backs and tight ends also have something to say about where the ball goes. So it's about weapons and options. And yeah. Last season, and this leads us into this next question, John D says, what can Penn State do differently on offense with the additions of Cephas and McClain that they were not able to do last year? And this is about options. So last season, Penn State struggled in single coverage. And this is not just Penn State, by the way. Like, you're going to see in the NFL during divisional round, lots of teams are playing cover zero because offenses are too good. And if you don't give them the opportunity, they're going to beat you. Like, you're the defense, you have to react. And if you can't bring down quarterbacks, or if the quarterback is smart and fast and quick with the release, you have to do something to change the math. And cover zero has been the way that a lot of defenses have gone this way. Penn State struggled in a lot of those situations to consistently make plays, or against cover zero, more importantly, punish the other team for doing that. Like, that's a touchdown. That has to be a touchdown. So I think with Cephas and McClain specifically, they're different, but they can both fulfill kind of the same roles in certain ways. So this goes a bunch of different ways, but I'll lay it out this way. Cephas and his skills, great at getting off press. He can get into his route. He's a really good route runner. He needs to get bigger and stronger and unlock the next level of his potential. But he's a guy that's kind of out of the box. I think he replaces what you had in Mitchell Tinsley in a roundabout way. Yep. But McClain, 6'4", 200 pounds, runs routes really well, deep threat, and can catch the... I think he can be one of those big play threats at all times. He needs to get better at route running, but his ability to run routes is there. So you have guys that I think bring more dynamism, and those cover one, cover zero situations, teams have to be much more careful, as long as these guys play out correctly, against doing that, especially if you give a quarterback, and Drew Aller seems like a smart guy, you give him easy reads. And that's, man, coverage is an easy read. If you're making it obvious, if you make it obvious and you know your matchups, you know your leverage, you know where to go the football, and then you've eliminated half the battle. The problem is then, do the receivers get open? I think these guys can get open better. I think they have more. They just have more. These guys are better overall in their athletic profiles and their upside than Penn State had and what they were working with last season. And that's no disrespect to the guys that were here.
Yeah. Yeah. So I respect it. No opinion here. Go.
Yeah. So we got into a little bit of the X and Z conversation a little bit earlier between Fitz and I. And here's the thing. You bring in a guy like McClain. He can do all, like, the idea is he can do all of it from his physical profile. So he could be the X. But he can also, if he's off the line of scrimmage, he's got that deep speed. You run him on deep crossers, posts, go routes, seam routes, things like that. He threatens vertically, which is, in gross generalizations, how I've understood it and how I kind of think about it, that's kind of the role of the Z. You run routes at every level of the field, but field stretcher, off coverage, that's where you want him to be. The slot is obvious. I think everyone knows what the slot does. But the X, and that's why I say, like with Cephas, he gets off the line so well. His release package, getting into his routes, faking out receivers, that gives you that reliability at your guy who's on the line of scrimmage most times, and his, you know, he's in the nose of the corner. But the whole point is, like, Cephas can play Z. Like, he's a good route runner. He's elusive. And if you wanted to, and you flip it, and you put McClain, who's big and physical and can be bigger and more physical, you can put him at the X if you wanted to. So these guys give you flexibility too. And that's another thing that Penn State with Taylor Stubblefield, he always told me, is you wanted guys that could play all three positions. You could condense them in the slot, and then you're completely unpredictable.
Yeah.
Tony, sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to echo that. I mean, I do think that that's been a priority of the program for a little while now. This isn't recent necessarily.
Yeah. So that's why, like, it's hard necessarily without knowing the new receivers coach and what they're going to prioritize at each position and how they want that to function. Speca here, Tony 0311. Anthony Speca, who is from Pittsburgh, helps Penn State get Quinton Martin to Penn State. Those two are friends, according to the reporting of Ryan Snyder, who's all over this stuff. Based off his tape, what is his best position? Meaning Quinton Martin. on a PA talent level. He's on the level of the famous names you've heard before. So where does Quinton Martin fit in that group? I see him being used like a Deebo Samuel for the 49ers. That's tough. So first off, I haven't dipped into his full film all that much. Now, I did watch a little bit so I could have some conversation before the show, Nate, but he's not a corner. I saw him play corner. He's too big to play corner. He's a big dude. He's only going to get bigger. I don't have any problem with him playing running back, but then the question becomes, is he most valuable at running back? Or do you want to put a guy with that athleticism at a different position? And where does he end up physically? I know our guys like him at linebacker. And then just my question is, like, he's so athletic. Are you recruiting him to just be the Sam, or is he going to move to the Will? And do you have so many Will linebackers that you would want to use his skills elsewhere? And I can kind of see the conversation about him being a receiver, but I need more testing times and to understand, like, you know, how big is he? Is he going to grow out? Like, if he's 230, he's not playing receiver. He's pretty tall, so I don't know about running. I really don't know. Maybe he's a safety, but I think he's going to outgrow that position. But the good news is he's so athletic, he can play most of the ones we're talking about. But I have a hard time seeing him just ending up at Will when you've got so many talented players they've had at that position recently. And I don't know, maybe you want a new one every year, but I think you might be able to use him elsewhere.
This feels like a real rabbit hole for an uncommitted prospect.
Doesn't it? Yeah. We're getting there, by the way. Oh my gosh, I'm chewing ice on air. How unprofessional. Penn State 2012. He asks, as a follow-up, if NIL is a big priority for him, how should the staff prioritize since he's not a premium position? Nate, this gets into the conversation about, like, this sounds like paying players, right? And that's, as Patrick Kraft has said, Penn State's not paying players to go to schools.
Yeah.
Can you comment on, just so Penn State fans have an idea and an understanding of how the NIL situation works at Penn State and how that might not be exactly the case of what you're thinking here?
Yeah, I think it has to be. You're not saying, there's $100,000 for you guaranteed when you get to Penn State, like the day that you walk on campus, that this is the way that it's going to be. And that number is changing based on the position. I think that what Penn State is trying to do and trying to establish is, hey, look, no matter what you do, if you're a scholarship player at Penn State, you are going to, there's a baseline package more or less that will be available to you and will be supplied to you based on the infrastructure of the collectives, plural, right? Is that this is what it will be. And then beyond that, the market will play itself out, right? Is as you produce, certainly, you know, when it comes to, I think it's interesting right now because Penn State has its marquee quarterback and has not had to recruit a marquee quarterback in this new standard of college football recruiting, of enticements and so on and so forth. So, like, I'm not sure what that will look like when it comes to, hey, we're going to guarantee that as our next marquee quarterback that you're going to make X amount of dollars. Like, I haven't seen that yet, and I'm not sure what Penn State's plan is for that.
Yeah.
I think it's more along the lines of, hey, the wording of the question as how do you prioritize it in the NIL space? I don't think you do. I don't think you do. Like, not right off the bat. You have to be able to establish that there is a foundation within which compensation will be made.
Right? And competitive, certain, right?
Correct.
Like, so it's not like you're coming in and you're getting a coupon to Wendy's. Like, you're getting a right? Like, so yeah. I trust me, I've been at jobs where it's like, hey, we can't pay you, but here's a gift card. And it's like, yeah. I can't eat this gift card. I need money to buy groceries. And so, like, that's they are actually competitive in the marketplace, but they're not guaranteeing money to players, which is happening, right? And that leads us into this next question, but finish up with what you have, because this leads into kind of the conversation in general.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think you've seen them lose certain recruiting battles because of that. Like, yep. It is a principle of which Packraft has said it. James Franklin has more or less said it. Like, this is how we're going to do things. We're not going to, like, totally break the mold and sell out the entirety of the culture and the structure that they want to have surrounding this based on one player's talents. If a player is representing themselves and is, like, to that status, right, where they're a top 25 player, a five-star player,
yeah,
they're going to be worth that. It's not going to be, like, so far out of the mold of what the market is for them that Penn State is going to go to those lengths. So I just...
Does Penn State have the connections to get national NIL stuff? Like Bryce Young on the Dr. Pepper commercials, right?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, too. Like, Nick Singleton is going to be a superstar, right?
Mm-hmm.
If Drew Aller is a superstar at quarterback, does Penn State have the foresight and the aggressiveness to then get those opportunities to prove to other guys, hey, come in and play. And if you play well, like, the sky is the limit. We have the connections and the infrastructure to get you the real money, like a quarterback in the NFL getting endorsement deal money, or, you know, whatever it is on the college football level. That's where a lot of these guys are doing this in the NFL anyway. It's kind of like an off-season thing where you see Matt Stafford hawking pizza. And right. And it's not necessarily about coming in and we're handing you money. It's like, if you reach a certain threshold, it's about the connections.
Yeah. Like having actual celebrity, having actual cachet that you are of value to a business, right? Like that it's not just straight up pay for play. Penn State very clearly does not want to participate in that side of things. And more important, I think, I don't think Penn State's donors want to play that game. Like that's not, it really there's a debate for another time in another place about, it's just dumb. It's just there's a side of, hey, I can play fantasy football. And as a billionaire, it doesn't matter if I spend $10 million on NIL, right? It's lunch money. It doesn't matter. You can do that and it makes you feel good. And you've, you know, helped dictate a roster and gotten the players that you want and so on and so forth. And there are people, individuals out there who are doing that. I don't think that Penn State's donors have an appetite for that. And I don't think the program wants to set that standard. I don't think that's the model that they're trying to follow.
And that follows to an invasive level, right? So like then you, not that this isn't the case anyway, but you always have the conversation of the meddlesome donors at Texas or wherever, that suddenly you have Auburn, right? Places that the story is common that boosters and donors don't like ex-coach, and suddenly ex-coach is cut out of the knees and then doesn't perform well and then he's fired. Yep. One thing I should bring up here and to kind of set the table for a lot of this stuff, and I'll show you over here. If you have not seen it yet, this is the next level of NIL, and that is the NIL evaluations from On3. You can go and see what guys are worth. You know, you can click on Arch Manning, one of the most famous people, and you can go in here and you can see the roster evaluation, the NIL evaluation. And as On3 continues to progress in this area and players contribute to this and NIL become, we're, the picture and the value are going to make more sense. It's not going to be about what somebody's just going to pay you. It's like, what is your value? What is your brand impact? What is your social media following? What is your value as a football player? So that there is actually a marketplace and you're not just throwing darts in the wind. Or, and I want to bring this up as this next question now, because this is the next phase of I think, the pushback. Quarterback Jaden Rashada from NLE24 says, quarterback Jaden Rashada wants out of his letter of intent because he feels the NIL deal, I believe at Florida, was not true. Are we seeing a failed experiment in NIL? Was NIL a good thing, poorly thought out? Is college football down the NIL rabbit hole? Nate, where do you want to, which one of those three sentiments do you want to latch onto first?
NIL in its intended purest form is fantastic and necessary and long overdue. Yep. The notion that popular players, people with personalities, whatever, have an opportunity to capitalize, whether you have a personality or not, it doesn't even matter. If there is a world where you should be able to make money off of your jersey being sold, where you can make money off of you personally, your likeness being included in a video game, all of those things are so far overdue and should have existed a long time ago. The issue of Jaden Rashada and everything that we're talking about right now is that that's not what the actual system is. And the actual system is still intended to avoid the elephant in the room, which is employee status. Like, that's it. That's it. Is these guys are, if it changed the professional model to where these guys are actual professionals and not just have the ability, like the ability to make endorsement money, is fine for professionals. That's always been fine for professionals, but for some reason, we've dictated that as amateurs, they weren't able to do that. Okay.
Now, and it's somehow, I'm sorry, like I have to interrupt, and it's somehow nobler. Right. I understand that, like, as an adult, I get fatigued. Exactly. Right. Like the fact that, Katie Ledecky couldn't have any sort of sponsorship deals. She's in the Olympics. NBC is making billions of dollars off of her swimming in a pool, right? But she's a student athlete, and somehow this is a nobler thing than the exploitation going on around it is somehow, like, that's, you know, and not to get too far down these very complicated twisted turns, but, like, I always thought that was kind of like, we're just making up reasons for things that we want.
Yeah,
and
well,
I'm glad we're not doing, like, I'm glad at least we have this mess instead of what we had before, which was a little, not a little bit, I'm just going to be nice here, it's somewhat, maybe a little bit exploitative.
This has to transition, though. Like, that's...
Yeah, oh, for sure.
That's the bottom line is, okay, maybe, like, this can't be the destination. The destination is still out there. And I don't know exactly what it looks like, but there is a place for it that doesn't look like what it currently does, which is basically money laundering, right? Like, this is this cannot exist where it's like, okay, well, we're just gonna and you see it in so many different places, but it's just okay, these are the rules. The rules don't make sense as it is, but also we're just going to be the smartest guy in the room and figure out how to exploit those rules as best as we possibly can. And so, okay, Florida's Collective is going to make promises. There's no contract. There's no, these guys aren't signing anything before. And so it is ripe for that, right? Like, it is ripe for, and it's not necessarily even the fault of Florida football, right? And like, I'm speaking about something that I don't, like, I don't know Florida's inner workings, but I'm just saying collectives are also operating independently of,
because, like, they can't work with the university because all the other things we've covered,
right? And you have people and organizations making decisions independently of each other, and sometimes in a lot of ways in collaboration with each other, but either way, there's no formality to it until down the road. So you can make false promises. You see coaches talking about it all the time of, hey, these guys are being sold a bill of goods. I think that Penn State is determined to not be a part of that process, but you're going to continue to see this until, like, something formal, something transformative actually happens where NIL becomes what it is, right? Or what it was supposed to be, which is the use of your name, image, and likeness to make money in addition to what it is that you're actually doing, which is, what is your value to this organization?
Yep.
An organization that makes a ton of money and that is, yes, there's an exchange there. Like, let's not completely devalue to the people who are going to argue that a college education is worth something. It is. All of that has a financial value. You can actually see it. You can see the per scholarship value, excuse me, of being a football player at Penn State. You see it in the year-end reports. But the actual value to the organization is so much higher than that,
yep,
that it that those things will resolve themselves at some point. Or you would think that they have to.
Yeah. I apologize. I was trying to, while you were talking, I was trying to remember the name of the CEO of the collective we had here on the show, a Success with Honors collective. I can't
Jason
remember.
Jason Belzer.
Jason Belzer. Yeah. We had a great conversation. He said, like, there are different models with NIL and the competing models, one of them is going to win out. Right. So some of these things, this is, as you said, this is not the final destination that we're headed toward. We're getting there. And you look at Texas A&M. And what happened to the transfer portal this year, no one has specifically said, but that looks like the number one class of all time. And then suddenly a lot of those guys are not at Texas A&M anymore. Jaden Rashada more quickly. But if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And you can promise the moon, but that doesn't make you win. And winning and retaining talent and, you know, finding an edge is the whole point of it. We only got a couple of minutes here. I want to make sure we get to some of these.
I'm especially
No, but that's a great. We haven't had an NIL, like a really meaty NIL conversation about this stuff in a bit. So much needed. And I think it's important to kind of outline where Penn State stands and how they stand in this environment and how it's always changing. Right. So bold and aggressive, not to go all the way back and kind of start this conversation again. But I wouldn't call what Penn State is doing bold and aggressive. I would call it like sustainable, you know.
Yeah.
So James Franklin has pushed for bold and aggressive, but really what he was asking for is like, let's just get in the game. Let's not avoid it. Right.
Yeah. No, I think that, and these are the conversations that I'm having is, I don't want to get into like markets and these kind of, but like at some point, smart money and making sense win out. They usually do. And so you can try to disrupt and change the game 100%. And I think Miami is an easy example of that. It's okay. Well, this is where this program is currently. And with a double shot of espresso in the form of piles and piles of cash can upend that. It can, it can change that trajectory. It can take you from here to here very, very quickly. I don't think that is, excuse me. I know that's not where Penn State wants to be, but also it's like, hey, okay, you've got this on the front end where somebody's going to throw $10 million at a roster. That's fine. What about next year? How about the year after that? How about 10 years from now? Is that same person, do they still have the means? Are you relying on this like just from one person to bankroll your program for forever? Because the reality is like, from the outside, from the smart money guys, the people who are calling themselves smart money guys, that's stupid. You're just flushing your money down the drain because at some point, whether it's right now or 5 years from now or 10 years from now, either that guy will not continue to have those means. You won't be able to cultivate the same number of donors who can replicate or build upon that fund that you're using to pay these players, or it just drops off the map, right? Like, what happens if somebody, John Ruiz,
don't know him, right?
I don't know him. Hopefully he doesn't die. What happens if John Ruiz dies and there's no money left for Miami football, to where your fund goes from $10 million to $0? And now your entire roster is expecting certain things that don't come to fruition because it turns off the faucet, just ends. It's no longer even a stream. It's just done.
Yeah.
I think that Penn State is working very, very hard, as are the majority of other programs, to establish a sustainable, responsible, sense-making model of, hey, here are the relationships that we have with businesses that, it's a good relationship. These are fruitful for both sides.
Yeah.
Here's what we can use as a community to support these endeavors and say, okay, hey, $50,000, $40,000, whatever it is. Like, these are the packages that you can expect as a Penn State scholarship football player.
Right.
Like, I think that's the end game until things change, if they change into a more professional model.
Ivan Putski asks a great question. Might we be able to get a defensive tackle from the portal? You talked to Fitz, spoiler alert, teaser, by the way, you talked to Fitz about the portal tomorrow on the Thursday edition of the BWI Daily. Optimism there or hope? Like, kind of like, oh, wow, this fell from the sky sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, I think that you just keep playing the game, however it looks. Nobody expected necessarily Chop Robinson to open up. He's the easiest example, but like it feels like that's what's going to have to happen.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, it's now like, oh, surprise, this is awesome, we weren't expecting this, sort of. I made it sound like fate earlier, but that's kind of what it feels like. Of how many times is there going to be a 295 pound defensive tackle come through the transfer portal that wants to go to Penn State and is not going to listen to other offers from other schools that might be inducing him the way that we just described for 20 minutes or so. let's go to psych him. Clearly the talent level of the two running backs, Ka'Tron Allen and Nick Singleton, is off the charts. Lucky to have them both. Question, as they get more experienced, and what steps or growth in their game would you see as they progress in their college football career? So where do the two individuals need to get better? I think they're fascinating. I've always been fascinated by how well they fit together, Nate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the easy thing for me is catching the ball. I think that was an area, certainly of Singleton's for repertoire. That needs to develop. And I don't really know that. I'm trying to remember many targets to Ka'Tron Allen. I can't think
he's
of
a good
that
receiver.
Many.
Yeah, he's able to catch screens. I don't know what kind of route runner he is, but he has good hands, and he's a reliable check down sort of guy. And that's really as far as Penn State has gotten in the passing game when it comes to the running back anyway. Mike Yurcich targets the receivers. Like, he wants to get the ball down the field.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, I mean, I think that would – it's almost you're trying to do what the other guy does, right? Is you're trying to build out your game to do – so that both of them are not virtually the same player, but that you're not losing anything when one guy's out and the other guy is in. Right. Yep. So for Singleton, it's having the ability to, have the reliability, like the football plays, all of those things that the IMG experience helped Ka'Tron Allen be prepared for and do better. I think on the front end, I think that you saw Nick Singleton make a lot of those strides through the course of the season with that time. Okay, let's reverse it. What can Ka'Tron Allen do to mimic what Nick Singleton does, right? The breakaway speed.
Like, bigger, faster, stronger. Yep.
And we already know that he changed his body, right, from when he arrived at Penn State. And I mean, the guy's nickname is Fat Man. He's not fat.
He's 201 pounds on the roster. He lost 20 pounds this year. Yeah. Which made him more agile, and which something that I was fascinated by, you know, as his profile of a 220-pound running back that was so elusive. And you saw the fruits of that, of changing his body over and being more agile. Now it's the build back, right? So, like I said, they fit so well together because of what you just described. For Nick, it's all about the, I don't want to call them soft skills, but ball carrier vision. A little bit more agility, maybe a little less of a hammer, being a little bit more fluid. And then, you know, kind of the football instincts of setting things up, having a feel for setting up blocks and catching, like, oof, that's the one area where he fights the ball in the air and that's hard. But again, he knows that, and he's a good football player. He's a good worker, clearly. So he's going to be working on that to become better at that. And then for Ka'Tron, it's just, how many RPMs can you get out of him? How much faster can he get? Because other than that, like, they're great. Like, Ka'Tron, I hate always saying this all the time. Ka'Tron is a junior as a running back. Like, that's where his clock is. His intelligence, the way he plays the game. He just needs to physically catch up to that. A couple more here. Zach says, what's the chance that one of the stud recruits press for a good amount of playing time at deep positions? Elliot Washington, King Mac, Alex Birchmeyer, Javon Williams on the O-line. I have loved Elliot Washington's skill for a while. From a physical standpoint, I think he's one of the better athletes that they have in this class. King Mac, obviously, man crush on his game. that's going to be an interesting one because of his position. For me, I think Elliot Washington has a chance to crack the back end of the roster because of his size and the way he fits and the way he can mimic what Storm Duck does. So as long as he is can mature into that role, he might be able to crack the fourth corner or maybe the fifth corner, and that guy rotates this year. Do you have an opinion on this group?
Nope. I think you have great opinions, T. Frank.
Well, good. And the other thing I'd say, with Alex Bergstrommeyer and Javen Williams, yes. Just yes. Because I saw Drew Shelton not... I don't want to be rude here. Not know how to pass block. He did not know how to pass block as a senior in high school to the level at which he needed to play, right? Which was the whole thing I said of like, he's very good. He's going to need time to develop. And then suddenly with Phil Troutwine and his work ethic, Drew Shelton's work ethic, he was able to progress and be a part of a winning team up front. I don't think he was excellent, but he played left tackle in the Power 5 and Penn State won all the games he started. That's a huge thing. These guys, and again, no offense to Drew, he just had a farther way to go. 290-pound Javen Williams and 290-pound Alex Bergstrommeyer. I'd say both those guys are farther along in the progression scale. Either of them could, if they want it. Like with what I've seen of what Phil Troutwine can do with these guys. Yep. Let's get to this one, and this will be our last one, unless we have time. With the with John Ashley from Twitter. John's a regular here from last offseason. I wanted to say hi to John. With the options of the true impact 1-3 technique players on the thin side for the roster, what do you think finding a true Mike linebacker? Do you think finding a true Mike linebacker would be a focal point? Does that put pressure on John Scott as recruiter, seeing as what just happened to Taylor Stubblefield? What about that last part, Nate? John Scott Jr. has gotten good football players here. He's developed them. But the recruiting at that defensive tackle position has still been lots of misses. And even at defensive end, some of the guys they wanted, TJ Parker, some misses. And that's not to say that he's on the hot seat, but how do you see that in terms of, you know, the future and projecting where Penn State wants to go and where they've been in recently?
I don't see that as being like a glaring issue that's existed. Okay. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? To me, John Scott's story is development and certainly this year, kind of transforming the sack numbers and the tackles for loss numbers. I mean, I think that the performance on the field, has been pretty good. Like overall in terms of, certainly against what they were expected to do, right, and what they did this year. But yeah, from the recruiting side of things, pass.
this is the thing. It's like I'm with you there that the development and the production and the ability to turn guys from the transfer portal into first and second round picks, like to give them the platform and to help them succeed. I don't think you can question John Scott Jr.'s productivity. The part is just like the misses at defensive tackle go beyond him in the timeline at Penn State, you know, over the last 7, 8, 9 years. So I think that's the point here is just get it. There hasn't been another guy with PJ Mustipher's profile since PJ Mustipher, which is why they're scrambling right now. They have not found a guy that can be an athletic one technique that has the size and the growth potential to be that player, and like they haven't gotten one in 5 or 6 years that has worked out, that's ready to ascend. So now we're in the situation they're looking for one in the portal, and it's like you have to comment on it. You have to say that is absolutely a thing, but then take it into the full context. To the first part, no, I don't think having a true Mike linebacker, whatever that necessarily means, if you mean like an old school neck roll guy, no. Absolutely not, because then you'll be shredded in the passing game and the athleticism to mirror and get into the open space. That's all going to be a problem anyway. So not that, but overwhelming talent everywhere else. Sure. Yeah. You can always make up for deficiencies with overwhelming talent everywhere else. Last question here. This is a short one, Nate, because we're going to talk about this all off season. We've talked about it already. Yeah. Realistic expectations for 2023.
To compete for the Big Ten. Period. Right. Like yeah. compete for the Big Ten, and then see where that takes you. Right. Nobody wins all their games, right? Like Georgia did, I get it. But to set that as the expectation, I think is a little foolhardy. And I think that Ohio State demonstrated this year that you can get into the playoff either way, right? Yeah. If you don't have to beat both of those teams, Michigan and Ohio State, to find your way into the playoff. Now, granted, you got to win your non-conference games. Like it is very overwhelmingly clear that you're not getting in as a two-loss team. Like that's just, that's not going to happen for Penn State. But if you can find a split with Michigan and Ohio State and compete and be part of that conversation throughout the year, like, is that a realistic expectation? Yeah. I think so. Right. I really do.
I think the expectation is what you saw this year. Maybe an 11 win team, maybe 10, 11 wins. And to do that with a new quarterback. I mean, I think that's a good place to be. And that's kind of the baseline expectation for me is what they did this year. They can replicate next year by winning as many games and maybe more, you know, like you just said, open to more, but I think the baseline is 10 wins. And if you start with the baseline there, that's pretty great. And we saw what Penn State was able to do in the transfer portal to get a couple receivers, to get it all the way back to the very beginning of the show where they are setting up, I think, for a positive 2023 with what they did during the portal window. Nate, thanks, buddy.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Also, one last thing.
Sure.
That never gets any publicity but needs to be talked about. We focus so much on Penn State naturally. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody ever worries about what anybody else is doing. Like, it was impossible to know what Penn State's schedule, like how those teams would end up being this year ahead of those projections. Like, that's such a huge point. So when you set expectations for what Penn State's going to do, it really does matter what the teams on the schedule and when you play them also, like how that comes to fruition.
Why did you ruin a great show with perspective?
I'm sorry.
Why did you end the show with perspective? No, it's perfect. That's what Nate does. And Nate's coming up tomorrow to give you more perspective, talk about the transfer portal and more with Sean Fitz in the BWI Daily Edition. I'm Thomas Frank Carr.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.